Last May was a Vaisak ceremony, and Terry and I and we went together, didn't we?
I don't think so.
Oh, well, sometimes.
That makes a better story. I'll
go along with it.
I do.
I went with a couple people, I guess, obviously, I don't remember who now, and we went to the day-long Vaisak ceremony, and it was really lovely up at Aloka Vihara with the nuns. And August 27th, when they come, please come and support them. They're just wonderful people. And it was a day of meditation and walking and Dharma talks, and one of the brief mentions by Aya Ananda Bodhi was on the four types of people. And I was intrigued by that subject because I've thought about this my whole adult life, about the four types of people. And the Buddha defined it as people who go from darkness into darkness, people who go from darkness into brightness, people who go from brightness into darkness, and people who go from brightness into brightness. And the reason I've always been wondering about this is, why do people in the same circumstances, brought up the same way, are completely different? Well, those of you who've been around a while know my history, and I have really good reason to think about this. Two sons raised exactly the same way. One is in prison, and one has a PhD in wildlife biology and is setting up nonprofits around the world. How is that possible? How does that take place? And I hadn't heard any teacher, except the Buddha, actually go, this is what's happening. These are the four kinds of people. And he recognized. Anybody else wonder about that? Just looking at the world and thinking, why is that? And then, you know, going into prison, you know, we meet those, especially two types of people, darkness into darkness and darkness into brightness. Most definitely. Ramon's back there shaking his head. He knows. So at this past Buddhist Pathways Prison Project retreat, we had fortunately 40 people, and we had former inmates. And anybody here went to the retreat? Oh, that's too bad. You missed something good. Anyway, one of the former inmates had just been out for 2 months. His name is Glenn, and he served 44 years in prison. He had been in prison since he was 8 years old, from foster home to foster home, and then into, you know, just abysmal situations. And he really didn't have much of a chance. And then he was convicted of a crime he insists he didn't do. And the parole board was willing to release him, I believe they said 15 years ago, but he would not admit to doing a crime he didn't do.
Wow.
He did time instead. He said, I didn't do it, I will not sign those papers. So he came, Jacques Verdun, whom many of you know, prison reform person with great programs he puts together, brought Glenn to our retreat. And talk about heartwarming. This guy, worst of circumstances, is a bodhisattva. He is so wonderful. He is wonderful to talk to. When he hugs you, you just feel like the whole world is hugging you. And one of our volunteers who drove him back to Oakland, he couldn't stay the whole weekend because he's on parole. He's only been out 2 months. And he had to be back in Oakland. And we asked Brett, who is our president, so how was it? And he said, I can't even put into words what it was like spending time with Glenn. He said it was so wonderful. How he just sees the world with such love and devotion. And that also got me started about these four types of people. How can this man, who had nothing going for him, and now he's just this loving, kind person that we loved being with. So the sutta is called the Tamanata Sutta, and here is the very beginning stanza. And it's four stanzas, and I'm going to go through the four types of people, read the stanza first. And then, as always, feel free to comment or give your take on it or your experience with this. So this is how the Buddha starts. There are these four types of people to be found existing in the world. Which four? One in darkness who is headed for darkness, one in darkness who is headed for light, one in light who is headed for darkness, and one in light who is headed for light. So he didn't speak in riddles. You know, this is pretty straightforward. Here's how these various people think. And again, does it mean some people are just born good? You know, no matter what circumstance you put them in, they're born good? And I'm asking this because this was what goes on in my mind a lot. And are some people just not born good? Is it karma? What is it? One thing that I have cogitated on a lot is, and I use this a great deal, is the Buddha's admonition about practicing before, during, and after. And I think it's way more profound than we initially think. It sounds like a simple phrase. But to practice before, during, and after means that we learn from every situation. There's no situation that is not our teacher, as long as we look at it that way. And again, starting to look at people in prison, I realized many of these people were not born good. I don't know how many people are born good, frankly. Or maybe we're all born good. I don't know. But I do know that people who are willing to practice before, during, and after can go to great lengths in freeing their own minds. And I've seen that happen. So, from darkness to darkness. Here's the first stanza. And how is one the type of person in darkness who is headed for darkness? There is the case where a person is born into a lowly family, the family of a scavenger, a hunter, a basket weaver, a wheelwright, or a sweeper, a family that is poor, with little food or drink, living in hardship, where food and clothing are hard to come by. And he is ugly, misshapen, stunted, and sickly, half blind or deformed or lame or crippled. He doesn't receive any gifts of food, drink, clothing or vehicles, garlands, perfumes, or ointments, bedding, shelter, or lamps. He engages in bodily misconduct, verbal misconduct, and mental misconduct. Having engaged in these misconducts, he, on the break of the body after death, reappears in the plane of deprivation, the bad destination, the lower realms, in hell. This is the type of person in darkness who is headed for darkness. So, and to skip ahead a little bit, because I know, oh God, Buddha was also a product of his society and his times. And the cosmology of India at that time, there were hell realms and there were heavenly realms. And the hell realms in Pali were called Narayas, and there were eight of them. There were four that was super, super hot, and there were four that was super, super cold. And everybody just accepted this is the way it is. So, and the Buddha did too, apparently. Or at least he preached that way, perhaps to speak to an audience who would understand what he's talking about. I think in contemporary society we could think more in terms of mental hell realms and heavenly realms. Yeah.
The thing I was struck by is there was no exposure to the other one, to wholesome conditioning.
Right, right.
That doesn't look like they didn't come out of it, they didn't see it modeled. I mean, that's
exactly
kind of what I noticed about that.
I think that's a really good point, and that's one of the things I've come up with as well, that there is no modeling.
Yeah.
Also, he was talking about at the time, the sutras, who were, I guess, like the Dalits today, you know, the lowest, lowest class, when he, So, very briefly, on the cosmology at the time, hells were not permanent places. It wasn't like a Christian hell, where you're there for eternity. You're burning in hell. In Buddhist cosmology, mythology, it was a period of time, and then you moved on after the karma had been burned up that you needed to burn up. And so there was always hope, even if you went into one of these hell realms, that you would eventually end up in a more heavenly realm. Yeah.
I just noticed that you're using words like was.
Mm-hmm. Say that again.
Yeah. That Buddhist cosmology was
past tense,
and you're saying, you know, because, well, anyway, you were saying that they saw it that way, or he saw it that way, and maybe it is that way, or maybe not.
And there you go. Yeah, maybe not. I personally don't believe any of this, but that's just me. I have nothing to base it on. Yeah, Maureen.
Describing that Lama, I had two kind of things that maybe made more sense to me, and it was like, how would you feel if you were in that circumstances? And two of the beings he described were, or hell realms he described, one was like, this was a being who had a very large stomach and a very small mouth.
Oh, yeah.
So it's that never having enough to be satisfied and always, you know, so I can identify with that. And the other was being crushed between two rocks, like having this pressure where there's nowhere you can go and you're stuck. So if you take it that way, having those feelings, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, and that's more the, at least for me, that's the way I look at it, is it's a mental conditioning, you know, that we experience. But I think the first part of this stanza in the sutta is talking about the deprivation that some people are born into, where you have no control over that. You know, who knows why somebody is born poor, and like Glenn, you know, ending up being incarcerated, you know, as a youngster. Who knows why that is? And I think Linnell makes a good point. There was no mentors there. There was no teachers around. There was nobody to say, no, you know, this is going to cause so much suffering in your life. So that was the first kind. So I see that there's two kinds of darkness he's talking about. The darkness of the environment that this person would be born into, and then the darkness they're going to because they don't have that person, that teacher, that incident, whatever it is, that's going to lead them away. And I think we all know, maybe not personally people like that, but we know situations like that when you read about people who end up in prison over and over and over again, and people who just don't seem to have any hope and just go from one dark place to another because there's no escaping it. You know, I was thinking about it, and I think a lot of the extremist Muslims that are destroying our cities and killing people randomly, including other Muslims, are in this darkness to darkness place. There's nobody saying, this is going to cause more suffering for you and everybody else. This isn't the way to work out your differences at all. It's just almost a self-fulfilling thing. Which also brought up here, I'm going to go just into a mind stream, about anger. And I've noticed, and maybe you've noticed in your lifetime, anger can be addicting. And if you're angry at something, unless you notice anger is being present and you are mindful about it, you might actually look for reasons to be angry. And you might even make up stories to make yourself angrier. Anybody ever done that? I think if we're honest, we've all done that. We've all been in that hell realm where anger is taking over and we don't even look for a way out of it. We just look for ways to perpetuate it. Again, it's a self-identity thing. Yeah.
You know, this is a little bit different angle. There was a movie back in the probably the 60s. It was called The Bad Seed.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I remember that.
When you mentioned, you know, she was had a little ponytail. And
mm-hmm. Sweet little girl.
She was evil. You know, and why? I don't think it really, you know, ever came to why, but she was just a bad seed.
Right.
And I think there's, you know, I don't know if it was from the past or what, but when you mentioned that, you know, well, she came from a middle class, mm-hmm. you know, she had a little ponytail, a little dress, and a smile, and looked up, she pushed you down the steps.
I remember that movie.
Yeah, it was very, very powerful movie. Mm-hmm.
And that's, and we're going to that in a minute, that's going from brightness into darkness.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if she ever had any brightness.
Well,
it's the situation she was born
right.
into, because the Buddha seems to, and if anybody has another interpretation, feel free to say it, but it seems like he's talking about environment and then moving from environment into a mental attitude. Mm-hmm. So from darkness into darkness, here I'm interpreting it as this really deprived environment that you, for whatever reason, end up in, and you keep moving in that direction, which actually makes a lot of sense. If there is nothing to take you out of that, like anger, take you out of that cycle, you're going to keep going, just going and going. So that's darkness into darkness. And this is another, and Ramon knows this statistic, it is estimated people in prison, 80% were abused, mm-hmm. either physically or mentally, as children. And so many of them are moving darkness into darkness. Unfortunately, they have therapists like Ramon, they have Buddhist services, you know, and we hopefully can help them start seeing to stop that cycle and start changing their thought processes by seeing how much suffering this is causing. So the second one is from darkness to lightness, my favorite category. Love this category. So here is what the Buddha had to say about this. And how is one the type of person in darkness who is headed for light? There is the case where a person is born into a lower class family. And again, he goes through the whole description of a Sudra family back in India back in the day. And they don't have anything. But this person engages in good bodily conduct, good verbal conduct, good mental conduct. Having engaged in good bodily conduct, good verbal conduct, good mental conduct, he on the breakup of the body after death reappears in a good destination, the heavenly world. This is the type of person in darkness who is headed for light. So again, in the Buddha's time, there were, I think, 31 heavens. Anybody know how many there were exactly? I believe I read 31. And you can move up and down. Again, they're not permanent, and they're not ultimate liberation in Buddhist cosmology. But they're certainly a better place to go and a delightful place from the descriptions than the hell realms. Yeah, Lauren.
You know, one of the things that strikes me is that this is very different, or it strikes me as different from the sort of prevailing American myth that anyone can do anything, no matter what, it's just up to you. It seems like there's more of an acknowledgement. I mean, maybe there's a mystery there even about why did some organisms, you know, mind, body, people, right. you know, have the ability to withstand that. Why do other people not? And in a sense, it seems more compassionate. It describes that if you go from darkness to darkness, there's suffering. And it's putting that out mm-hmm. for us to learn from. But it's not pretending that it's, you know, just, you know, pull up your boots.
Right. Mm. You described exactly how I felt about it, why I was so taken with it, because he describes it. So, yeah, this is what takes place. And sometimes it's almost an impossible situation. And he acknowledges that. So, yeah, Bob.
There have been a number of studies on why some people who come from very difficult backgrounds are able to make it, and they talk about the factor of resilience, and to typically, I think most of the research shows that there, for most people, there's somebody in their lives.
Exactly.
Who gives them, you know, even if it's a little finger, it's something, somebody that who becomes a touchstone and enables them to.
That's right.
Get a.
And that is about the common denominator, I think. There is, at least that I've seen in my own experience, that seems to be it. Somebody who cares, somebody who is the wise person in your life, and I'm not talking about a Buddhist teacher, I'm talking about a wise person in your life. And I know when I ask in prison, who is the wise person in your life, there's a lot of blank stares.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then I challenge them, so can you be the wise people in this prison? Which brings me to, is Yana still here? There she is. Okay, she met with seven people at level 4 prison that we have identified as being sincere practitioners and wise people, and we're cultivating them. We're hoping they'll be the wise prison in this particular yard, Sac C yard, and they're exceptional people. I think it's going to make a real difference in their lives that they're acknowledged. They have people who support them being kind, good people. That's going from darkness into light. And I think it'll make a difference. I was going to tell you what's kind of a sad story, but it's a kind of happy ending. And I'm reading this really good book. It's called The First Buddhist Women. And it goes into the culture at the time, it goes into the women at the time, and it goes into some of the first nuns. And one of them was a woman called Padachara. Anybody heard of her? Apparently after Mahajapati, the Buddhist stepmother, she was the most well-known. And very briefly, her story, and this is a story of going from darkness into light. So Padachara was supposed to be in an arranged marriage, and she fell in love with another man, and she left her home, and she left with him, and then became pregnant. And as was the custom at the time, she wanted to travel back to her familial home to give birth. And her husband begged her not to, but she did. She gave birth, came back. She got pregnant with another child. He once again said, please don't go to your family's house, but she said she was. He decided to go with her because they had a little kid at this point. She's pregnant. There's a huge rainstorm. He makes some kind of covering, and as he's making it, he is bitten by a poisonous snake, and he dies. Mm-hmm. And she's just overwrought and decides to try to make it to her parents' home by herself, comes to a raging river.
Mm-hmm.
Some of you recognize the story now, and she decides to leave her newborn on one side of the river and carry the older child to the other side. She used to carry the newborn to the other side, leaves the older child to wait for her, and she'll come back. She carries the newborn to the other side, puts the child down, goes back, and then a bird of prey comes and picks up the child and takes it away. She gets to the other side, but she's crying and yelling, and the older child thinks that she's telling him to come, and he comes and he drowns. So now she's lost everybody in her family. So she decides to go to her familial home, and on the way she finds out that the house had burned down and her parents had both died. So this is about as dark as you're going to get. I mean, there's nothing going right in this person's life. And she saw no meaning in life, and she wore the same clothes till they just wore off, and then she ended up running around naked, and everybody said she was a crazy woman. There's a mad woman who's running around naked, and nobody wanted anything to do with her except the Buddha. And the Buddha actually spent time with her, and he wanted to hear what happened that has you like this, so bereaved. And she told him, and he mentored her. And this goes back to what Barbara had said. He mentored her. And that made all the difference in the world. And she became the wise person. She, next to Mahajapati, she became the person that women came to, and especially women who had lost children, came to her because she understood and she could counsel them and how to get out of darkness back into brightness. And it's remarkable, and you know, if somebody like that can pull themselves out of just these horrible circumstances, you know, there's hope for all of us when we end up in these dark situations. Anybody have any people that you know that have gone from darkness into light? Okay, tell me. Okay, back there.
I'm thinking of my the guy that I've been working with that's been paroled for 3 years. I mean, he did 12 years, and I mean, now he went to school, got his AA degree, and he's like, he got promoted up to, you know, after a year of being there, he got promoted up, and he's really into the Dharma, and he's doing all the Kirtan stuff, and he's like, got his security level on parole reduced down to like a minimum level when he was a high risk, and it started within the prison system. He started out with a Zen nun for 10 of his 12 years. So it's really encouraging to see him, you know, it's really a beautiful thing.
Yeah, when people pay attention to other people and count them as valuable human beings, what a difference it makes. Thanks, Brian. Yeah.
I think there's so many people now that are going from darkness to light in the recovery movement. Many.
Yes.
Really dark places and great transformation.
Mm-hmm. That's so inspiring when you see people like that. It just opens your heart. It makes you so glad. Yeah.
I have had occasion to. I've two friends that have gone from in sobriety and lots of, you know, gangs stuff and abuse things and all that. And one in particular, we were talking about just finding the Dharma, being learning about qualities for the first time, like kindness and gentleness and things that were completely not part of early life. And how profoundly, what a life-changing experience that is to just see, and to see it again, see it modeled in someone who, hopefully, a teacher or somebody like that, makes a huge, amazing difference.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So the next category is from brightness to darkness, and unfortunately, I think there are. A politician that might fit this category. I won't go there. And so how is one the type of person light who is headed for darkness? There is the case where a person is born into an upper class family, a noble warrior family, a priestly family, a prosperous householder family. And here the Buddha is listing the three caste systems at the time, and not mentioning the sudras. A family that is rich with much wealth, with many possessions, with a great deal of money, a great many accoutrements of wealth, a great many commodities, and he is well built, handsome, extremely inspiring, endowed with a lotus-like complexion. He receives gifts of food, drink, clothing and vehicles, garlands, perfumes and ointments, bedding, shelter, or lamps. But he engages in bodily misconduct, verbal misconduct, and mental misconduct. Having engaged in bodily misconduct, verbal misconduct, and mental misconduct, he and the breakup of the body, guess where he goes? Yeah, he's going down into the hell realm. That's right. So this person is born into brightness, and now he's using brightness in a different way. Again, born into circumstances which are privileged. I think all of us, the majority of us in this room, were born into brightness. We were very fortunate that we had guidance, we had food, we had shelter, we had people who cared for us. But this particular person still heads toward darkness. And again, another conundrum for me, why is that? And again, we probably all know people who have done this. I've got a very dear friend who's got a great deal of money, and her sister's sons are both in and out of trouble constantly, in and out of jail, addiction problems, all kinds of stuff. And I just wonder, they had loving parents. Why? You know, why is this going on? The mentor thing works for the darkness into light, but what happened here? I don't know. Maybe it is karma. You know, I just don't know, but I certainly ponder on that. Now there's other, I won't go into my own thinking on it, but I've got other thoughts on it.
I think that sometimes we take a very sort of large view of causes and conditions, when causes and conditions can be much at a much different level, because we all come into the world with different genetic and biochemical dispositions, predispositions, and things like birth order, things like, I mean, the interaction of those, we don't understand all of that. So coming into relative wealth and privilege and loving parents or whatever it is, isn't a guarantee that whatever our individual, because we all have our stuff, but most of us don't end up in darkness, but some people do, and it's the causes and conditions at more of a micro level, but not in the grander level.
You know, it could be, and then you, I often wonder, is it because they have no perspective? You know, being born into privilege, seeing nothing but privilege, they don't even know what it's like not to have that. And I'm wondering if that not having any perspective has anything to do with it. I know another person, and her son, again, having problems and this and that, and they sent him to Mexico to work on houses for the poor, and his attitude changed completely. Mm-hmm. The perspective changed completely. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden you really see how things are when you see how the rest of the world lives. It sounds trite, but it seemed to make a difference in that case. Miles first, and then Laura.
Turning on to what Ruth said, you know, that every child was raised in a different family. Mm-hmm. And then they have the same parents, same situation. That's one thing. And the other, about the brightness to darkness, you know, that it sounded like more like the sociopath, and a lot of those people will demonstrate those tendencies at a very, very young age, extremely. Mm-hmm. And then there's still the argument goes back and forth, is it nature or nurture? You know, is it genetic personality, or is it something to do with how they were, especially in infancy?
Maureen, after Laura. Laura, sorry.
It struck me that it's not taking into account any mental illness. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a major factor for many of the people who go from darkness to darkness, or who come out of darkness and into brightness when they get appropriate treatment. And that's not a factor that I think the Buddha had in his repertoire at the time, but I think that it's a piece that needs to be taken into consideration for why some people prevail and some don't. And some,
I think you put it in the category of karma, mm-hmm. Which we could fit all of this into. Uh-huh. It's the way it is, our psychological aspects and all of that. I think that's what he's talking about, you know, right?
We're talking about, good environment and bad environment, socioeconomic, and I think it would be a mistake to think that a wealthy family that has a lot of things doesn't necessarily have abuse or any of these things happening in them, or that a low socioeconomic doesn't have inspiration and positive guidance. So,
Yeah.
I think there's other people that have had their hands up longer.
Okay, who had their hand up longer? Okay. Margaret, you guys decide.
The thing is, because of as Barbara was saying about causes and conditions and the human condition, there probably are as many reasons as there are people. Mm-hmm. I have a neighbor, wonderful loving couple, and they had adopted two kids. And the younger one was adopted from a mother who was a drug addict, but he was adopted when he was only 3 months old. Whatever happened, happened in the womb. Mm-hmm. And Cameron, it's as if he was born amoral. Mm-hmm. And he loves his parents, and he loves his family, but he genuinely doesn't seem to have a concept of right and wrong. Mm-hmm. And they've worked with him in all sorts of ways over the years, and it's right now he's sort of stable, but it's not there. Mm-hmm. And what he had to learn was, therefore, if I do this, then all hell breaks loose. It's not because it's right or right, but it's not because it's wrong. If I do this instead, I do it not because it's right, but because everybody will leave me alone. I mean, it's a genuine, seems to be, and maybe that's karma, I don't know. But then there are the people that you spoke of who they simply came from a life of privilege and didn't know what they had. So.
I guess I have read also some studies about resilience, and they also come to the conclusion of that there is a part of nature. So they're not conclusive. Mm-hmm. Personally, I'd rather stay with a Native American tale about the grandfather talking to a child that explains to him that inside each one of us there is two wolves.
Yeah, right. The one who feeds.
Right. That kind of explains to me.
Yes,
everything.
And I think that's a kind of along the lines what the Buddha was saying as well. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm probably going to say this wrong. I want to piggyback on, I think it's what Barbara said. It's so true, you know, that there's so many causes and conditions. I feel like I've read or heard somewhere that, you know, there's so many causes and so many causes. It's like a, you know, is that the tangled skein metaphor? Is it? Because I know it is anyway, I think. Yeah, you would need a super, 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 super computer, right, to determine the position and the trajectory of every single particle. But then let's just suppose that as some enlightened beings alive right now teach, that there are spirits that, you know, past lives. Mm-hmm. There are fully awakened beings right now teaching that, you know, this is just one lifetime of many, right? Mm-hmm. So throw that in there as well.
That's right.
And then, you know, I think then, you know, one of those people could see why people are traveling in those directions from darkness to darkness or darkness to light, right? Because it sounds to me like it would be karma. And then if you say, well, there's all of these causes leading to the outcomes, so many that you can't, it's almost incalculable. But then if you also say, well, this person having this experience during this lifetime, I'm using the wrong words probably, but is a soul, for lack of a better term, that in this particular lifetime, you know, because of what's happened in the past lifetimes, this is that all the karma, not just right now, but from, you know, previous lifetimes, is leading to this experience.
I think that's probably what the Buddha thought. He believed, you know, he taught. Even though some teachers say he didn't, but I believe that he taught rebirth and karma and accumulates. And he also said, and don't try to figure it out. It will drive you mad if you try to figure it out. But he goes into each one of these, you know, his solution is mental and bodily conduct. Those are, it's the very first training.
Yeah.
of the Noble Eightfold Path is virtuous action. That is the one thing we can do. You know, hopefully, maybe some people can't because of some of the reasons we said, but for most of us, yes, that is something we can engage in, that we have control over. So I'm going to go into the last one, from brightness towards brightness. And I think that's where we all are. We'd like to think so, yes. And how is one the type of person in light who is headed for light? And then he goes into, again, the categories of families. And he says a family that is rich, with much wealth, with many possessions, blah, blah, blah. And he engages in good bodily conduct, good verbal conduct. I think the majority of us are living that way. And I might be Pollyanna, but I think if we are fortunate enough to stumble on these teachings, and in the Tibetan system, it is how rare is it to encounter the teachings of the Buddha? Now we hear it. If we don't take advantage of it in this lifetime, in what lifetime shall we find it? And I think all of us in here are doing that. We might struggle with it, we might have doubt about it, but once we start, it's there, and then we start noticing a difference. And I think for almost all of us, it resonates as this is true. This makes sense. I see it happening in my own experience. So, and here's an interesting tidbit on wealth. The Buddha didn't have any problem with householders having wealth at all. In fact, he must have been grateful, because if they didn't, they wouldn't be feeding his sangha like they did. So there better be somebody with some wealth. But I recall that he had said wealth should be divided in 25% should be to support your family, 25% should be invested in your business, 25% should be saved, and 25% given away. I think that's actually a pretty good fractional breakdown of what to do. I'm going to be finishing up. I wanted to bring this up because I also think it is really a good suited to see how radical the Buddhist teachings were from that time and place. You know, people believed that karma was, you just accepted it, and the only way of changing it for the next rebirth was rites and rituals that the Brahmins performed at the time. And the Buddha said, no, you have control at this present moment, looking at your verbal, mental, and bodily conduct. You have control over your life. You can change the trajectory. You don't have to go to someone else. But as we all, I think, mentioned, having that wise person in your life, and I don't necessarily mean a Buddhist teacher, a wise person, and I bet every one of you has had a wise person in your life that helps steer you in a direction towards brightness. I would bet anything on it. Whether you paid attention to it or not, that's another story, but that's for you to figure out. So, it is 8 minutes to 9, so we're going to close. Let's just do a closing metta. And once again, I'd like to offer metta to Roseanne and Vic. May they be safe and protected from all types of harm and danger. May they be peaceful and happy and healthy and strong. May they be at ease. And may they be comfortable with life, no matter how it's presenting itself. May they be comforted by friends and family and by all of us who care for them. And may they be fully awakened in this lifetime.